I love that. Jess told me that that song's written by Donna Summer's daughter. That's a little different than "She Works Hard for the Money," isn't it? I mean, that, wow, what a song. Thanks, Dan, Jess, for that. We are in a series. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. We're in a series that, if you weren't here last week, second part in a series called Low Pressure Systems. It's focused on families, but as we learned last week, it has implications very broadly. But a couple things real quick. I meant to announce this last week, got preoccupied and forgot, but as a result of the diet challenge from January to Palm Sunday, we will be giving 1,634 pounds of food to Bog. Okay, so that's pretty cool. So Southbrook is 1,600 pounds skinnier than it was back in January, so that's really neat. You know, I realize not everyone's going to participate in that. I added my 3 pounds to it, you know, that I lost during that period. But a number of you really took that seriously, and we hope you're also healthier for it. But then also, as just the timing of everything was perfect. I love it when a plan comes together. But Austin and I happened to launch our podcast this week. It came out yesterday, and you can go to your app store and you can download it. Here's the title of the podcast is Chucked. It's our name. And we had two episodes that we recorded this week that are part two and three from last weekend's talk. So if you'd like to hear us go in deeper to what we talked about last weekend, Austin actually is leading this whole thing. So he turned the tables and he interviewed me this week. And my perspective on last weekend, you can download that at your app store. The most common thing that I've said at a wedding, I've been doing weddings for 30-some years, the most common thing I've said at a wedding is to remind the couple that a diamond, as I put the ring, you know, as I give the ring to the groom to put on his bride, I will always remind them, a diamond is just a piece of coal that stayed on the job. That's all it is. It's just a piece of coal that is the result of time and pressure. It's the result of time, that's all a diamond is. What makes it so valuable is the combination of time and pressure. And in this series, we're looking at this concept of, you know, what pressure does. Guys, could I have a blank screen? What pressure does to us, and I want to make sure that Austin did a really good job of communicating this last week, I thought, that, you know, we're not saying that no one needs pressure, that kids don't need pressure. Kids need pressure, actually. It's just too much of a good thing is crushing, not developing. So there's this book, I'm working on like 5 books at once right now. But one of the books I'm working on is this idea that I thought of a while back, and I'm working on this idea that fits here, called the Adamus process. And Adamus is the Greek word for diamond. And you think of Wolverine movies. What's the name of the group that the Wolverine's in? I know you came to church prepared to answer questions about Wolverine, the comic book character. X-Men. The X-Men, adamantium is that really strong stuff that Wolverine has in his body. And so this process that I've seen in my life and so many others is this: we start with our purpose in life. You know, we venture out in life and we go into our purpose, but we soon begin to experience pain and pressure. Okay, pain and pressure. And the real turning point in that process is the period where you have to really apply patience. Really have to apply patience. Patience is hyperion in the Greek word, is to bear up under, to be able to outlast that. And then this is a really cool biblical word that means a lot different, has a lot different meaning than it does in our culture. And that is the word perfection, which in the biblical understanding of that, it simply is maturity. Where people, places, and things don't govern you anymore. And you can rise above the pressures of this life that seem to make others succumb. And then, you know, you go right through that process again. Well, I want to make it very clear here that what we are not saying is that to develop, families should just eliminate all pressure. Just play video games. That's the biggest pressure as you should get okay? What level you're going to get into in the last Clone Wars video game or something, you know. But that's not true. Every single one of us has gone, will go through this process. And the Bible calls, the biblical term for this process is sanctification. That's just a fancy word for our process where the power of Christ in us becomes very real. It becomes paramount. Now, here's our contention in this series and with, as we begin to launch the play initiative, hopefully in 2018. Our contention is, through observation and experience ourselves, as if you heard us last week, that there is a whole lot more coming into your family than there used to be. The pressure that is on kids is stunning. And so if you exacerbate that pressure, oh my gosh, they may never make it to that point of development. They may be filled with resentments, as we'll talk about next week. And that parents have to see themselves as sort of the, you know, envisioning these walls as they filter that pressure. That parents are encouraging observers in the process, because it's God's child, not yours. Your child is on loan to you, which is a great thing to be able to say when your child goes through what Austin went through. God, this is your child. I don't know what to do. This is your child. But that you are an encouraging observer, and a lot of your task is not to amp up the pressure, it is to filter that pressure down. And that's our contention, because I think what we heard this past weekend was ditto. You know, our journey is so similar to that, and boy, our kids going through a lot. Our kids are going through a lot. I think of all the things last weekend that stood out to me was the piece Austin wrote about the girl who's not as concerned about her fourth period Algebra 2 exam as she is about the sexual harassment she's going to get in third period. Any of you remember that? And that's the thing, is just of all the things he wrote that stood out to me, that many of us as parents, we have no idea. And that's not to excuse aberrant behavior. It is an explanation for why sometimes kids just go, I got to find a way to get out of this craziness. In counseling terms, it's called the identified patient. It's the person, a lot of times the person perceived, in our family it was Austin, perceived to be the one who's going off the rails, was actually the one who had the courage to say, this is crazy. This expectation's nuts. I'm checking out. And we often put shame on that person when really what they're doing is what the system needs to break down. Well, we want to create, anybody with me on this? We want to create low pressure systems, okay? Where we have wisdom with this, because any of you have children that there's no way they're from the same gene pool. There's no way they're from the same gene pool. So each child demands different wisdom, right? And it has to do with managing and filtering this thing called pressure. And so if you haven't been here, in 2018, we want to launch an initiative where we get real intentional about helping equip kids to manage pain and pressure. Really, that pain, pressure, patience part of that process in their development. Well, in 1979, there was a documentary made about students at summer camp called Meatballs. And the American philosopher Bill Murray memorably played Trip Harrison, a camp counselor who was training counselors. Now, that's using the term counselor very loosely, okay? But I wouldn't recommend this movie to everyone, but it came out when I was in high school, so I'm going to redeem it somehow. But I just love this movie because it is the movie that contains the official chant of the play initiative in low pressure systems. And some of you might have heard me mention this a couple weeks ago, but there's this scene on the night before Camp North Star, which is this low cost camp that anybody can go to. They're about to have the final competition against Camp Mohawk, which is the rich kids camp. Okay? Anybody remember that? Rich kid. So Morty, the camp director, is having a pep, he's gonna have a pep talk. Here's what he says. He says, "Hey gang, come on, look, it just because we're losing doesn't mean it's all over." And one of the kids, Phil, says, "Cut the crap, Morty. The Mohawks have beaten us the last 12 years. They're going to beat us again. And that's when Bill Murray, Trip Harrison, stands up. And I love this. He goes, that's just the attitude we don't need. Sure. Mohawk has beaten us 12 years in a row. Sure. They're terrific athletes. They've got the best equipment that money can buy. Every team they're sending over here has their own personal masseuse. Not masseur, masseuse. But it doesn't matter. Do you know that every Mohawk competitor has an electrocardiogram, blood and urine tests every 48 hours to see if there's any change in his physical condition? Do you know that they use the most sophisticated training methods from the Soviet Union, East and West Germany, and the newest Olympic power, Trinidad Tobago? But it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter, I tell you. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. And the group starts chanting. It just doesn't matter. They go into this chant. And then he goes on. He says, and even if we did win, ha! Even if we win, even if we play so far over our heads that our noses bleed for a week to 10 days, even if God in heaven above comes down and points his hand at our side of the field, even if every man, woman, and child held hands together and prayed for us to win, it just wouldn't matter. Because all the really good-looking girls would still go out with the guys from Mohawk. Because they got all the money. It just doesn't matter if we win or if we lose. It just doesn't matter. And then he gets them going again. It just doesn't matter. And go on. And I remember this because my college coach used that like once a year with us. I still remember he would say things like, and he'd exaggerate like most coaches do. He'd say, there's 6 billion Chinese who don't care if you win this game tonight. It just doesn't matter. And it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. So the question with this is, because this is really interesting, that whole scenario is interesting, because the way I think now is the pressure was really on the Mohawks. Because they were expected to win, right? Does pressure really exist? That's the question. Well, the answer to that is no, it doesn't, and yes, it does. Pressure is really, really only the byproduct of expectations. Once you take on expectations, Michael Csikszentmihalyi is a Czechoslovakian, I wish his name was Smith, Csikszentmihalyi is a Czech psychologist who wrote the book Flow, and he said this. He said, once you can deconstruct the results and focus on the process, there are no expectations and there is no pressure. But pressure is always the result of the outcome. Pressure is always the result of, what if we don't win? What's coach going to think? What are my parents going to think? What are people going to think? And so anytime, Csikszentmihalyi says this, anytime we take on expectations, we are projecting in our heads a target. And the less you think you can hit that target, the more doubt. The more doubt, the more pressure. The more pressure, the more likely to fail, and the cycle just keeps on and on continuing. And so a lot of this series is about our looking at this and saying, wait a minute, does pressure really exist, at least to the level that we make it, in the suburbs in particular? Now, we all need pressure. We all need some extent in which once we venture out on our purposes in life, we need to mature and be perfected. We all need that. But what happens when we put so many expectations, they're just flooding into the house. They're just, this pressure is just choking us out and resentments are starting to build. Well, what then? And that's what this series is really about. And so it begins, we believe, with taking a good, hard look at ourselves and understanding what is it that's motivating us. Why do we do what we do? Have you ever stopped to really think about why are you so driven? Why was it so important that you were a success? Success is never the problem. It's never the problem. It's only an issue when it is the objective and not the byproduct of what really our process should be, and that is the process. And so tonight, I want us just to back off this for just a minute and just take a look at this concept of pressure and expectations. Now, what makes my job pressured is I have expectations that are legitimate, right? I have some expectations that are legit. You expect me to live an honest life. You have integrity. You expect that. That's a legitimate expectation. It puts pressure on me. But that's a good pressure. But when my son comes up here and speaks, and I get a greater response from that message than any I've done in 35 years of doing this. And people start asking me, so when are you retiring? That's pressure, okay? That is not good pressure. But no kidding, the thing about my position is I can succumb to, well, people said that last week's message was really good. I got to outdo it. You ever do that to yourself? That's unhealthy. Because that's all about being subjected to people's expectations and places and things. And when you start doing that, you are in for a journey of paranoia, not perfection. And it makes you crazy. Well, welcome to the world of your student. Welcome to the world of your junior high and high school student. Because that's the world they're living in. When I was a kid, when many of you were kids, people's opinions were not 12 inches from our face in a little box. Now they're there. So what can we do? What can we do about this thing that pressure really is a fantasy? It really doesn't exist, but it does exist, right? Because there are expectations. And on top of that, there are unrealistic expectations, unhealthy ones. What can we do? Well, I want you to just sort of started us in this tonight. This past week in 5-on-5, if you didn't start, go back to it. There's only one download a week. We've reduced it from 5 to 1. The one is a little longer than the 5 individually were, but it's 1. And we focused on solitude. And one of the great solitude passages in Scripture is Psalm 139. Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there's any offensive way in me and lead me on the way everlasting. So many things I want to say to you about our experience as parents. I've known that verse for 30-some years. I practically can do Psalm 139 from memory. But I wish I would have taken that more seriously in regard to how I was affecting my kids. How's pressure emanating from me? Show me, God. Is there any way in which inside the walls of our house, I'm not filtering it out, I'm actually exacerbating the pressure unknowingly? And so this week is part 2 in our 5-on-5 challenge. Go to your app, go to the 5-on-5 app in your app store and look at these questions. We're going to do 10 questions that in your family, in your group, we're going to equip you with. Where does my identity come from? Who am I trying to impress? A dear friend of mine last week, he's my age. I was so impressed with the responses from last weekend. But one of them that came to me, this guy my age, he said, I cried the whole time, and it was because it hit me that I've been living my whole life to try to prove the bullies who bullied me in junior high 30-some years ago wrong. For almost 40 years, I've tried to prove the bullies wrong, and it's nearly cost me my marriage, nearly cost me everything. For 40 years, isn't that crazy? But have you done that? I've done that. Am I seeking someone's approval ahead of yours, God? Because on that one, 95% is 5% short. Go the next one. Why do I want to succeed, achieve, and why? What's behind that? What's the fuel there? We'll always be hybrids when it comes to our fuel, but the more we can transition over to being grace is our fuel and love is our fuel, oh man, that's a good thing. Is it because I'm still trying to build my own kingdom ahead of yours? Do I still live in the insecurity of not being enough? Does fear or love drive me? Am I overanalyzing my life, stuck in my own head too often? What is my inner dialogue saying? What is it going to take for me to involve God in my inner dialogue? What's it going to take to have a relationship where throughout the day you are not just by yourself in your own head? As a friend of mine likes to say, your brain, your mind is a dangerous neighborhood. Don't spend too much time there alone. What's it going to take for you to begin seeing life via that dialogue with God? Well, as you know, some of you know, we're looking at the most influential Christian in history to get some answers on this. So what I'm doing is I'm sharing with you throughout this series the Apostle Paul's process in how he handled the fact that a lot of people didn't think he was legitimate. A lot of people thought he was not a legitimate apostle. And so 1st and 2nd Corinthians, mostly 2nd Corinthians, but somewhat 1st Corinthians, are written to say, here's why I'm legitimate. And so Paul has to state the reasons. And tonight we're going back to 1 Corinthians chapter 4. Look at these words from 1 Corinthians chapter 4. And Paul is saying to those doubters of his, the people that he would be, it would be so easy for him to just succumb to getting their approval and their stamp of affirmation. He says these words, and I'm telling you, this is in your 5-on-5. Spend this week in your Bible right here and just think through and meditate on this, because this is real important stuff. This then is how you ought to regard us, as servants of Christ and as those entrusted with the mysteries God has revealed. Now, it is required that those who have been given a trust must prove faithful. Next verse. I care very little. Look at this. This is like one of the great verses in the Bible, in my opinion. I care very little if I am judged by you or by any human court. Indeed, say these words with me. I do not even judge myself. Isn't that amazing? I'm not even qualified to really make an objective evaluation of my own motives and actions. My conscience is clear, but that does not make me innocent. It is the Lord who judges me. And this week I want to walk you through three truths from that text that I just want you to think on and chew on and meditate on and talk about in your groups and in your family. Number one, here's the first one. Is Paul says, my goal is to be a servant, not a success. He says, how you ought to view us is as servants. The word there is doulos, which literally means a servant who's a lot of times the servants that day, their ear was stamped or, you know, pierced. Their ear was pierced to say, this servant belongs to this person, to this family. And Paul says, I am a servant. I am a doulos of Christ. My goal is not to be a success. My goal is to be a servant. Now, why is that important? Because if this is still your intention in life, is to be perceived by people as a success, then you're always making yourself susceptible to the whims of people's opinions and evaluations. They're not qualified. But if your goal, no matter what you do, is to be a servant of Christ in your context, in your life, it'll set you free. Amen? It'll set you free. That's, you know, the amazing change that we have seen in Austin is this change, as he, and I would only say this because he opened up about it last weekend, that he went from being a self-centered individual to a self-centered individual who's surrendered to Christ now. He's still self-centered. He still has to surrender that every day. But the thing that we see is the remarkable change in his servanthood. That's what we see, because he still sees himself realistically. So this is huge. What's your goal? Go ahead, choose that. Success is not the problem. But when it becomes the goal, wow. I'll see you in 10 years. You know, I'll see you in 10 years when this doesn't work. Secondly, Paul says this. My aim is to be faithful, not flashy. My aim is to be faithful. What does he say he is? He says, we are simply stewards of that entrusted to us, or managers of the estate. What is it about a steward that's so liberating? Stewards don't own anything. They're just managing what they've been given, what they've been entrusted with, Paul says. And this is a liberating truth when this becomes real. When you can say that honestly, that my goal in life is not to be some impressive person. My goal is to be faithful to my God, faithful to my church, my family, my friends, my callings. It's liberating, because then it's not I'm subject to everybody's opinion. And, you know, I've said this for years, that my goal is to be faithful. But in reality, a lot of years I lived to try to get affirmation. I mentioned this in the podcast this week from Southbrook, that honestly, I never got from my mom. My mom did not like men, and she did not like preachers. She loved me, but I had two strikes against me. And so she was never excited about this. I mean, she was, you know, I remember one time she said, your grandfather would be rolling over in his grave if he saw what you were doing right now, because he was a legalistic Bible thumper. And you know, she didn't mean it poorly. She kind of said it in jest, but she meant it. She meant it. He probably was. Grandpa Bert, he's a mean old cuss. He probably was rolling over in his grave. And so while I loved her, she loved me. I never got this, like, And so while I said that my goal was to be faithful, the truth was I expected Southbrook to be my mother, and you're not my mom anymore. Number three, here's the third thing Paul says, is my thoughts are simple, not self-critical. And this is the thing I want to focus on, is when he says, I do not even judge myself. I will tell you a truth now that is so liberating. And that is, you are not qualified to judge yourself. You're not. You're going to skew one way or the other. Some people think too highly of themselves. Not very many. Most people, even when it looks like they think too highly of themselves, they're actually making up for their sense of inadequacy, right? Because most people I know are trying to mask the fact that they judge themselves very harshly. Any parents here who judge themselves very harshly? Yeah. One of the classic books written about pressure and managing pressure was a book written by Dr. Timothy Galloway. He wrote this, years and years ago. And it's been used in all venues of sport. But the title of the book is The Inner Game of Tennis. So his sport that he coached was tennis. But this book has been used by football teams, basketball teams, etc. And then he wrote about how self-judgment is the best way to slow your brain down, create tension, and tense muscles are slow muscles. So if you want to mess up, try too hard. Try too hard. Like parents, this is so worth being here to hear this. When you say from the stands, try harder. Don't do that anymore, okay? That's never the solution. Try harder. That's actually a great way of self-judgment to create tension. Tension creates mess ups. He says this in the book. He said, the first skill to learn in the art of letting go, the human inclination to judge ourselves and our performance as either good or bad, is letting go of the judging process. It's the most basic skill to the inner game. When we unlearn how to be judgmental, it is possible to achieve spontaneous focus play. And he's exactly right. Now that we know how the brain works much more than when he wrote that years ago, that these words from 1 Corinthians 4, 3 and 4, where Paul says, I didn't even judge myself, is a great way to live. Because not only are you probably subject to the opinions of others, and it's why you've created so many expectations for yourself, part of the reason it's even worse is that you project the inner expectations you have about yourself and other people smell it. So for years, I lived with very high expectations for myself. Well, guess what happened to the people around me? They sensed that and felt that I had the same expectations for guess who? For them. And this is a liberating day when by the grace of God, we become non-judgmental people toward ourselves. Because God is very good at doing that. He doesn't need your help. And you're missing out on life because your inner dialogue with, self, talking to self, is one of judgment and evaluation constantly. It has a detrimental effect upon you. It has a detrimental effect on how the people closest to you perceive you and perceive themselves, especially if you're a mother or father. And that's why I said last week, you don't have to do anything. When you're a parent with very high expectations for yourself, you walk into the room, the temperature in the room goes up 10 degrees for your kids because they feel that. They feel it. And you're missing life. You're missing life. I told you last week or a couple weeks ago that I read Ernie Johnson's book, Unscripted. And he opens his book. He's the broadcaster, the sports broadcaster on TNT. And he opens his book talking about the time when he was 8 years old and he was playing Little League Baseball in Georgia. He was playing shortstop for his team, the V's. Little League teams have the coolest names, the V's. And it was a tie game. Pitcher threw the pitch. And the kid hit a line drive that was so hard hit, it went over Ernie Johnson's head, over shortstop, left center field, before he could get his glove up. And it bounced over the chain link fence and went on the other side of the fence. And there were runners at second and third now. Game was tied. And so he said their manager came out to the mound to have a meeting on the mound of the minds with his team, his infield, about what they needed to do if the ball came their way so that the tying run, or the go-ahead run, which is now on third base, didn't score. And if you don't understand that because you don't know baseball, then you're not American, okay? You're a communist or something, but you're not American, okay? Come on. This is our pastime. So he says the coach gives this meeting, and he gives this strategy. And he said, I'm convinced our first baseman, the only thing he was thinking about on this hot Georgia morning was the snow cones that we were going to get after the game was over. He really wasn't paying attention. But nonetheless, we went back to our spots. But at that point, we realized the left fielder and the center fielder were gone. They were nowhere to be seen. They were gone. And he picks up. He says this. When that line drive was sent screaming, the left fielder and center fielder had converged, and they had had the best seats in the house to watch the ball hit the grass, disappear into the trees and bushes and underbrush that adorned this part of the ballpark where no ball had ever gone before. And during our meeting of the minds on the mound, they apparently had taken it upon themselves to climb the chain link fence and retrieve the official league, Little League Baseball. The search was underway, and the rest of us V's sprinted toward the fence to provide encouragement or to point to where we thought the ball had gone. Can't you just see that happening with a bunch of eight-year-olds? Or simply ask, why are you on that side of the fence? Well, as it turns out, the ball had come to rest in plain sight about 10 feet past the fence. Our two missing outfielders had seen it, but they had also discovered a juicy blackberry patch, and it was filled with the mother load of ripe, apparently delicious blackberries. While the infielders were getting chapter and verse from the coach on what to do, the ball was hitting our direction. Our left and center fielders were stretching their skinny arms through the bramble, deftly avoiding the menacing thorns and rejoicing in their discovery, evidences of it on their faces. And he writes, his dad was a Major League Baseball pitcher and then became a famous broadcaster for TBS who always told this story. He says, in many ways, that story has become central to my perspective on life. It is a parable about not being afraid to step away from the game, translated the job, the meeting, the practice, the conference call, the list of emails, the seemingly pressing matter at hand, to appreciate the unexpected, unscripted moments of life. When I think about it, it's always the blackberry moments that stand out when I think back. Because I think God has placed blackberry brambles along the paths we walk every day. We just need the eyes to see them, the ears to hear them, and the hearts to detect them. Maybe the worst thing about all this pressure that we're exacerbating so many of us is that we're missing the blackberry moments. We're not living, are we? We're not living. We're not the happiest nation on the earth. We're like 17th or something. I mean, it's crazy. We're missing the blackberries. And most of it, it just doesn't matter. Most of it, it doesn't. Come back next week and I'll tell you why. Let's pray. Father, most of what we feel pressure about just doesn't matter. Jesus said, seek first my reign and my righteousness, and everything else will take care of itself. Most of it is small stuff. Don't sweat the small stuff. And I know the people that make up this church are the very people who need this. We all need this because so many times for me, I was so focused literally on giving instructions on the mound that I missed the blackberry moments. Not always. I wasn't evil. But a lot of us can identify with this. And this seems so simple, but just if we see ourselves as servants, that's what we are. We're not successes or success trainers of our children. We're servants. We're stewards, not owners. Even of our kids. They're not even our kids. They're yours. On loan to us. And you are our judge, not ourselves. No one else. And we surrender to you, who judges us mercifully by your grace. So, Father, this week, as we, many of us in families and small groups and stuff, venture into this material, may we search ourselves. Bring about the pain and the pressure we need to go into that patience journey where the old person dies and a new person living only for you and loving others lives. This was Jesus, and he is our Savior in this area too. And everyone said in his name, amen. See you next week, everybody.